From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is All About Grants.
From the Office of Extramural Research at the National Institutes of Health, I'm Megan Columbus, and welcome again to All About Grants. Today we'll be starting a new series of episodes related to preparing your application. In our first episode, we'll be discussing what you can do to best prepare yourself to submit your application. To talk about this with me today is Dr. Suzanne Fisher, the Director of Receipt and Referral at the NIH Center for Scientific Review. With a background in biochemical genetics, Suzanne began her NIH career as a scientific review officer and has been directing the Division of Receipt and Referral since 1996. Suzanne is uniquely qualified to be able to tell investigators and fellows what they can do to be prepared even before the funding opportunity announcement to which they want to apply. Suzanne, you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
There are lots of reasons for people to be ready. And one is, though, NIH tries to give investigators as much time as we can. Occasionally, FOAs are available only for about 2 months from when they're first published in the guide to when the applications are due. So whatever you can do to be ready so you can really concentrate on the science part at that point can only help.
I know one of the first things that you've told me over and over again is that investigators really need to seek out their institutional officials, that Office of Sponsored Research or whatever it's called in your institution early. Why is that?
There are a couple of reasons. NIH has its deadlines, but they will have deadlines that are ahead of the NIH because they have aspects they need to look at, so that you need to know about their internal deadlines. They will also have policies and rules about what kinds of applications people with different positions in the institution have to have in order to submit. So to submit a research grant, you may have to have a certain level of an appointment. To submit a fellowship, obviously the situation would be different. So you need to know the local rules, both for what kinds of applications they'll submit, because investigators don't realize it, but they don't submit the applications to NIH. Their institutions do on their behalf. So you need to know their rules and their deadlines to make sure you're ready.
Sometimes those deadlines can be 2 weeks in advance of the NIH submission due date. And so that is a very important point.
That is. And, you know, they're putting that into effect for a number of things. They need to review things. They are going to probably focus more on the administrative aspects and the budget aspects. But they also know that you need to build in a little bit of extra time in case you need to have error corrections. When you submit your application electronically, one of the advantages is that our system checks to make sure that if you have certain errors, you may be able to correct them, but you have to have time before the deadline in order to be able to take advantage of that. So they're trying to help you by building some time for that.
Well, in many offices sponsored research, they actually do support the grant writing process in all kinds of ways, taking a lot of the burden off of those investigators.
I just did an outreach at an institution that had an extensive science writer editorial office, and they were more than willing to work with people in writing the application. And you may really have a lot of help at your institution, but you have to find out where it is and how you use it.
So I know you just mentioned applying electronically. In order to apply electronically to NIH, even though the application comes from the institution, the investigator must also have an ERA Commons account, the ERA Commons being the electronic systems that NIH use to communicate about your grant application with the applicants. Do you want to tell us a little bit?
Right. And as you know, about 97% of our applications are coming in electronically, but you need a Commons account for paper applications as well. So you have to have a Commons account. And an individual will have one Commons account for their lifetime, but then it can be affiliated with different institutions as you go through your career, and you can even be affiliated with more than one institution at a time. If you haven't established a Commons account at all, then you want to start with that, and your institution will help you with that and help you get your Commons ID. And you own your Commons account, so you're responsible for all the information and data in there and making sure it's correct and up to date. Make sure your phone number is correct, your email. NIH is going to be using this to get in touch with you if we need to.
Well, there's some information in your Commons account that's especially important, especially for new investigators.
Right. NIH calculates your new investigator status by your grant submission history and your grant application submission history and your grant awards. But then we also determine if you're early stage investigator eligible by the information you've put in your Commons profile, when you've gotten your terminal degree, when your residency ended. The system works far, far better if you have your new investigator status and your early stage investigator status straight before you submit any applications. Occasionally, people find, because they've moved or they forgot, they actually have two Commons accounts. And then your information may be scattered between the two, and you're going to have to work with NIH to consolidate that so that all your information is in one place.
And you can just call the ERA help desk to do that. Our application guide is very dense. Might it be worth a read before you actually even find a funding opportunity announcement to apply for?
I think it would be a good idea to look through it or to look through some of the information on the web to have some idea of what the basic structure is of an application. Investigators think a lot about the research strategy and the specific aims, which is where you cover the science in great detail. But there are lots of other parts, and those are going to take time to work on and to write your biographical sketch, the resources and environment, the literature cited. If appropriate, you're going to write about the involvement of human subjects and vertebrate animals. And so you need to have an idea of just how many different pieces go into a grant application so that when you sit down to respond to a particular funding opportunity announcement, you have a good idea of what's involved. Now, your biographical sketch, you obviously can have a lot of that there. Again, keep it up to date. You have a new publication, you know, make sure it's on your master list. But now we're asking people to personalize their biographical sketch for every application and include a personal statement, and you may want to pick and choose which publications you highlight. But you should have sort of a basic one that you can then modify for each application, either as you apply or maybe you're asked to be part of someone else's application. You also want to be ready. You don't want to hold them up if they've asked you to join their grant application.
You have mentioned to me in the past that people have run into trouble when they talk to somebody else who's been successful applying for an NIH grant in the past, but the rules have changed since that application was submitted.
Right. I know other people at your institution, other scientists you know, are going to want to be helpful, and they're going to give you advice, and you should listen, but you really need to check it. In the last 2 years, NIH has made more changes in their policies and practices than I've seen in my whole career here, I think. Part of enhancing peer review is that we've made a lot of changes. For one thing, if someone tells you that your R01 application is 25 pages, that's not right. We reduced that. It's now 12 pages for the research strategy and a page for the specific aims. So you really need to verify things in the application guide. Again, your sponsored research office or grants and contracts or whatever they're called, they should be more up to date. You can get good advice from others, but you really need to make sure that you're going with the most current policy and practice. One thing that hasn't changed and that you need to be aware of is the basic format requirements. So the font restrictions, the size of the letters, the size, the number of characters per inch, the margins and things like that, that hasn't changed in a long time. That applies to electronic and paper equally. And you really want to pay attention to that because nothing annoys a reviewer more than trying to work through an application in teeny tiny font.
One of the other things people might want to be doing is scanning the horizon and to find out what kinds of funding opportunities are coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about the different ways that they can be doing that?
Well, there are a couple ways. The main way is to be familiar with the NIH Guide for Grants and Contracts. And if you go on the NIH website and just Google NIH Guide, you'll get there. And there's a handy listserv you can subscribe to, and every Friday afternoon you get an email that lists all the funding opportunity announcements and any policy notices and anything else that have been published in the last week. And you can scan through them, and probably a lot of them are not going to be of interest to you, but most weeks you may see something that you want to investigate a little further. If you go to scientific meetings, there are often outreach sessions presented by NIH staff. They'll cover a lot of basic details. Depending on the meeting, if it's of interest to just one or two institutes, it may be very specific to their programs. And of course, each NIH institute has their own web page, and they will highlight from the NIH guide and things the opportunities that that institute has as current and that they are particularly interested in. So if you know you're in a certain area, you probably also want to keep track of the one or two institutes that are in that area of science to get a little more information about that. And again, they all try to be helpful and give you some useful tips and hints.
Well, and I guess the other thing to remember is that NIH is not the only federal funder of biomedical sciences. And so going to grants.gov will also allow you to scan all of the federal agencies at once. But I'd encourage people to check both of those resources, because right. even though all NIH announcements are posted on grants.gov, sometimes the search capabilities and things are a little bit different between that and the right. NIH guide.
But depending on what someone's doing, there may be opportunities at the National Science Foundation, at NASA, Department of Agriculture has grant programs. Many of the agencies have grant programs that may be applicable to some of our investigators. You have to be a little careful if there are rules about not submitting to the same place twice. Again, your sponsored research office can help you. I know some institutions, the sponsored research office makes an effort to scan a lot of opportunities and send out alerts to people. And that's good, but scientists are pretty independent, so I figure most of them are going to want to look for themselves as well.
In order to learn more about the application process and how NIH works, we certainly have a plethora of resources on our websites. We have NIH regional seminars, which are seminars that takes you from nuts to bolts through the process. Individual institutes hold seminars, and there are workshops oftentimes in conjunction with professional meetings. And so I'd encourage our listeners to look for some of those resources as they contemplate applying. Any last words from you, Suzanne?
You know, don't work alone. If you have a question, all of our websites have an email address you can send to. All of the funding opportunity announcements have. It's almost at the very end of it. There are contact information about people to ask questions. So don't just assume, because you may assume something that's favorable to you. So if you're not sure, it's better, again, to check. It's always a lot better to know what the real rules are in advance rather than going one way and then finding out at the last minute that that's not quite the way it is. So check, be ready, and then send us your application.
Well, and I always feel like we're being a little bit repetitive on these podcasts, but the other thing to do is call the staff at the institute to whom you think you'll be applying. So talk to the program staff there, find out some names. We actually are here to talk to you. With that, thank you for joining us. For NIH and OER, this is Megan Columbus.
For questions about ERA Commons accounts, contact the ERA Help Desk at 866-504-9552. NIH application guides can be found by visiting the OER website at grants.nih.gov and clicking on the Forms and Deadlines tab. That's grants.nih.gov.